Live from Hollywood, California, it's the Nighttime Show with your host, Stephen Kramer Glickman.
Yowah!
Tonight, we have our head writer, Matt Walker. I'm the voice of the Nighttime Show, and our very special guest, star of Mallrats, My Name is Earl, and Chance. Coming soon on Hulu, October 11th, Season 2 debuts, Ethan Suplee. And now, the host of the Nighttime Show. He gets the sprinkled donuts every donut day. Put your hands together for Stephen Kramer Glickman!
Hey, you are! Well done.
You're ever been announced in that way before, Ethan?
Never. It was fantastic.
He's magical.
I feel that there is a huge audience somewhere losing their minds.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Somewhere in Idaho. Yeah. There's a group that's like, yes!
This is the greatest! And all your neighbors who just heard that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Our neighbor's a big deal.
He has his own announcer in the living room. What's happening over there? We're so lucky that today we are in the home of Ethan Suplee. This is a beautiful house. What a beautiful
Stephen,
place.
What's the address here?
All right, the address. we're sitting at a beautiful reclaimed, I'd say this is a reclaimed wood living room, dining room table, yeah. And which looks out on a gorgeous view of Los Angeles. Wow, Ethan, what a beautiful home.
Oh, thank you. My wife did all of this.
I was looking around. I was like, there's a lady involved.
Yeah.
Yes.
Entirely my wife.
How long have you been married for?
We got married in 2006. We've been together since 2002.
Wow.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
That's amazing. Where did you guys meet?
We met when we were teenagers, and we've known each other for a long time. And one of our daughters was actually the flower girl at our wedding. So we had kids prior to marriage. We're going to hell. yeah.
Good for you. Yeah. Good for you guys.
But we've known each other a long time.
Oh, my God.
Well, to give you an idea,
man,
of how tasteful it is here, you know how people say, that guy's place could use a woman's touch. This is like 1,000 women's touches have gone on in here.
Yes. It's very well touched.
In fairness, we have 4 daughters.
Ah, right. Good.
So there's a lot of women touching a lot of things in here.
Are you the only man in the family?
Yeah, and they cut my dog's balls off. So
I'm the only man.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So you get to go to the bathroom for 12 seconds a day, and that's about it?
That's right.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Wow. Yeah.
Do you have like a man? We haven't gotten to see the whole house, but is there like a man cave or something?
Yeah.
What's your favorite thing in your man cave? Like, what's your favorite piece in there? Anything?
I've never really talked about this, but I have a collection of human skulls.
What?
In my man cave.
No, you do not. Oh my God, that's amazing.
No.
That's where Matt's going after this.
I like seeing how long Stephen buys that sort of information.
Yeah, no, I'm
He's
in.
Like, huh? Yeah.
Oh, no. That sounds like something you would have.
Kind of sounds like something I would have.
You would go to Necromance and be like, human skulls, and then.
I mean, I have a lot of weird. We had a lot of weird animal bones for a while in the house. We had a raccoon mm-hmm. skull.
I often fear you're going to get busted buying one of these things. And I just thought it was funny.
I thought it was funny to get.
It was illegal.
You know, one time I was driving.
Buy a human, sir, a dead human.
I was driving down the street. Matt knows this. I was driving down the street and I got pulled over for going through a stoplight, and the cop walks up to me and he goes, hey, do you know why I pulled you over? I go, I don't know. He goes, because you went through that stoplight over there. I go, oh, I'm so sorry. He goes, also, you're not wearing your seatbelt. And I go, oh, okay. And he goes, also, you were talking on your cell phone. I go, oh, okay. And he goes, also, your tags are expired on the back of your car. I go, ooh, that's a lot of things, huh? And he goes, yeah, those are all bad things. Let me see your license and registration. Pull my license out, registration, insurance, hand it to him. And he goes, your insurance is expired. I go, Oh no. He goes, and your license expired like 3 months ago. And I go,
this is a Subway Club card, sir.
Yeah, these are all bad. All bad things.
These expired 8 years ago.
So he goes, please step out of your vehicle. I go, oh no, this is the worst. I get out of the car. He goes, I have to search your car. Is there anything in your car I should be aware of? I go, no, there's nothing in the car. He goes, rustling around, he pulls out a fake police badge. He goes, what is this? I go, it's it's a prop. I'm an actor. I just did a movie. I played a police officer. They gave it to me. He goes, all right. Rustles around. He goes, what the hell is this? This is a collapsible baton.
Yeah.
How do you have a collapsible blackjack? Right. I go. I bought that on Hollywood Boulevard. He goes, I don't care where you bought it. It doesn't matter where you bought it. It's still illegal. You can't have this. And he goes, is there anything else in the car? I go, absolutely not. That's it. He reaches in the back and turns off my megaphone. I had a megaphone in the back seat. Yeah. Just a siren starts going. And he goes, all right, sir, this car is being impounded. And you're going to be fined a lot of money. And I was like, okay. And I just had to stand there on the side of the road while they took my car.
I'm amazed you weren't shot and killed. Yeah,
I could have. He could have killed me.
Yeah. He's still not black. So.
Yeah. Wow.
I loved your rationale.
Way to bring
though.
It. Way to bring it
back to reality.
Way to make it political, Matt.
I no, loved your rationale true. Of I bought this on Hollywood Boulevard, reputable Hollywood Boulevard,
if
where nothing illegal is done.
Right, if you buy something in a store, you shouldn't be able to get in trouble for it. That's how I feel.
Well, when you said you bought it on Hollywood Boulevard, picturing like
I'm not
you know
picturing
some
a store
guy
either.
Opens his jacket and he's got nunchucks and knives and batons and guns, and you went for the baton.
I've done that too. Yeah. But that particular one was I bought it in a store. I think
illegal
weapons are us.
I'm a baton guy. I think I'm giving those.
I'm a baton guy. I'm kind of a baton guy. my lord. Oh wow.
I'm feeling the baton. I think.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I need to protect myself from all those
from the cops.
From the cops these days. Hey, Ethan, you were born in New York City.
Yes,
in New York City proper, or
in Manhattan?
In Manhattan,
on West 12th, three blocks from a hospital.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
Specific. Traffic was that bad they couldn't get there?
My parents were hippies and thought home birth was fun.
Oh.
Yeah.
Home birth just sounds messy.
Yeah, I can't imagine what home birth would be like. What? Having kids myself, I would never do that.
Yeah, but that's what they were into.
They were into it, yeah.
Were they hippies like music and the hanging out with the smoking the...
I think full-blown, hippies. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Maybe, are they still hippies?
No. Now they're just... old. I'm sure they still, they still have hippie hearts, but they're not still like marching in parades and smoking dope with flowers. They're
that was
sure
very
not.
Poetic, yeah. Actually. They still have hippie hearts.
Yeah.
Still hippie hearts.
All the hippie activities have passed them by, I believe.
They still have hippie hearts, but those hearts need MRIs every now and then. So
yeah. That's okay. Did you grow up in New York City?
No.
Where
here.
Did you grow up here?
Yeah.
So when did you guys move out here?
I was like 2.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, so you have very little
basically
few memories of
New York. Yeah, I can't claim New York. Like, I'm from New York. I can't
I'm from
that.
New York. Yeah. Yeah. Screw you guys.
So where in L.A. did
That's
you go?
That's how everybody talks.
In the Valley, Burbank.
Uh-huh.
Is that not how everybody talks that's from New York?
But I can't wait for you to get beat up the next time you go there.
I'm all from New York.
What's the irony is the guy who beats you up will sound exactly like that.
Yeah,
but
yeah probably.
He'll have taken offense to it.
Yeah.
You
quit stereotyping. What's the matter with you?
Vinny, hold my jewelry. I gotta beat this guy up.
So you grew up here in Los Angeles, or did you grow up somewhere else? Yeah, in L.A.
In the valley. Yeah.
He just said he grew up in Burbank. Were you
in
not
Burbank.
Paying attention?
No,
on your
I
own
was.
Podcast?
He was doing the thing.
I was distracting
him.
He
was distracting me with voices. So in Burbank, did you have were there kids in the business that you were in school with? Did you know other kids that were in the biz?
Yeah, I went to school with a guy named Giovanni Ribisi.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
Oh, I love him.
Yeah.
From my two dads.
That's right. Yeah. And the Wonder Years. He was on the Wonder Years.
My favorite, Suburbia.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, such a huge fan.
Yeah.
Loved him. And on the X-Files, too. He was great on the X-Files back in the day. He's been on a lot of stuff.
A lot of stuff.
And you guys have worked together in real life as well, I believe, right? Didn't you guys work on a TV show together at some point?
Yes, that's true. He came and did a few episodes of My Name is Earl.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
I had forgotten
so
that.
So, what's it
just
like?
I'm very good.
Yeah,
I
he
do
was
my
actually
research.
Awesome on My Name is Earl. Bad Ralph.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That must have been cool getting to work with someone you've known your whole life.
Yeah, that was fun.
Are there other guys that you've known a long time that you've gotten a chance to work with?
Kevin Connolly and I did a few movies together, we were friends from, the time we were teenagers. we did John Q together, we did another movie which never came out, but it was fun doing it with him, you know.
Yeah, John Q was Denzel Washington,
So was it like a high school of the arts, or was it just you guys were all in drama at a regular high school, or how did that work?
No, it wasn't high school of the arts. It was just like...
I think, aren't high schools like in Hollywood and Los Angeles, for the most part, just all kind of high schools of the arts? I feel like they would kind of be in some way.
Yeah, I mean, now there's some of my kids did go to a high school in LA that was specifically for the arts, but it was like a heavy emphasis on fine arts, which would be like photography and painting and sculpture and stuff like that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Jeez. So that's what I think of. I guess it's also performing arts. But I am trying to dissuade all of my children from doing any performing arts.
Yeah.
So I push fine arts on them.
That's a very good move.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this business is insane.
It's insane, and it's really rough for girls. I can't, you know, I don't feel good about it. It's tough.
Yeah. I get that. Were you, when did you get interested in acting? At what age?
My parents went to college in Pittsburgh, and they majored in drama at a college called Carnegie Mellon.
Carnegie Mellon. That's
Tech.
Where I went to school.
That's where you went to school.
Yeah. And they then did Broadway shows while being hippies.
So were they there with Stephen Bochco and some of the big names that came through?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What shows did they do on Broadway?
George M. My mother was in The King and I.
Oh, wow.
I think... Oklahoma.
Hair.
It's possible.
That would have been too real, too metal. Something like that. Yeah. The Fantastics.
Yeah.
A ton of Broadway shows. Oh, they met That's doing so cool. A Streetcar Named Desire in Summerstock.
Oh, cool.
I don't really know what Summerstock is. We don't have that out here.
Wow. I don't know what it is either, but I remember hearing about it doing theater in Colorado. Oh,
Summerstock is like where you get cast in the whole summer of shows. So they'll four shows. So in one show, you'll play, Tevye and Fiddler on the Roof. But in the next show, you're playing the Shoeshine Boy in Oliver Twist or something like this. So you're trading up and down from role to role throughout the summer, basically.
Yeah.
And that's usually how you end up in some of the worst productions in history.
Do you ever do like the great ones, like the good roles, and then get sick for the other ones?
No, I never did. I never did Summerstock. I did tour the country with the worst musical of all time.
What was that?
It was called A Stoop on Orchard Street, and it was a sequel to Fiddler on the Roof. Fucking horrendous.
That's how you came to Los Angeles. That's how we met, and that's how you started doing stand-up comedy.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because we...
Because you were staying at a motel attached to a bowling alley in Canoga Park.
Oh, so glamorous. So glamorous, even. I had quit my job at Hollywood Video to back in the day to go on tour with a crappy musical. And then it took me all over the country. And in the end, it was Canoga Park bowling alley.
Wait, where was Hollywood Video?
Hollywood Video was all over the place. Because I worked at Blockbuster Video. Okay. And then they also had another brand called Hollywood Video.
Yeah.
So yeah,
there were a couple of video stores that stuck around, like Vidiots. Do you remember them?
Yeah, sure, of course, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was something like that, but I remember Hollywood
Video.
There
was the one that had like the missiles.
Yeah.
Rocket Video. Where we did stand-up. Steve and I did stand-up there just in the corner of the video store, and people would come over and they were picking DVDs off the shelf behind us while we were trying to tell jokes.
Just go, really? That's what you're going to watch?
Yeah.
Made in Manhattan? What's the matter with you? And then we would try to like roast people about their horrible video choices.
That was a bad gig.
That was a bad show.
Yeah.
And
I'm really glad we're taking this time to interview you, Stephen, and learn more about you.
Stop it. I'm sorry.
If only we had a special guest to learn more about.
There is something nostalgic about having to go to a store and make a decision and pick something and then go home and put it on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We don't have, and my children will never know.
Yeah.
That's like
just
my
instant
father
gratification
about
on everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if you rented a bad movie back then, you're trapped.
That's it.
You watch
it.
Yeah. Nowadays, like, you just turn it on Netflix, you watch for a few minutes, you go, forget this.
Yeah.
You turn it off. But like back then, you were trapped. You were going to, that's it. You're going to watch. you know,
entertainment decisions were permanent. Like, I remember we lived in a time before remote controls where, like, you would go to the TV and switch the knob and hope for the best that it was going to be good.
I tried to explain that to one of my kids the other day, and she was just not having it. That is not real. There was no time where you had to get up to change the channel.
Oh, yeah.
I remember someone telling me that their kids thought they saw, like, reruns on Nick at Night or something, and they were like, what was it like when everything was black and white? Honey, we didn't invent color. It didn't just suddenly things went to color. That's not how it works.
When you saw green for the first time, what was that like? What?
Yes. Did you think we guessed on oranges? We were like, well, I bet these will be orange one day.
So did you do theater when you were in school?
In
or?
School, yeah, I did. You know, I just saw, like, my parents, we had cats named Stanley and Stella when I was a little kid.
So it was like, it was part of your life already.
I was often told about acting and had plays in the house, but I wasn't super interested in theater.
Yeah.
You know.
Did you want to be in TV? Did you want to be on TV and be in movies and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. That was interesting to me. That was, and then the first job I ever had.
Hang on, because I have to, this is the thing. We do this on our show.
Okay.
IMDb says it's something I want to, we're going to check and see if it's true. It's
almost always wrong.
It's almost always wrong. Yeah. IMDb says your first job in television or in movies was on Tales from the Crypt.
Not
Tales
my first job.
Oh, well, IMDb, you suck, you sons of bitches.
Here's the issue, though, I think. I think that IMDb for TV series will date it.
List the date of when the series debuted.
Yes, and so if I was on a later episode of Tales from the Crypt,
it'll still be listed ahead.
Yep. Yes, I think that's
it. It says that this is 1994, and then your next job is 1995. So
my first job was, I think, 93, and it was Boy Meets World.
Whoa! Wow.
Yeah.
Did you play a bully?
I did. I played a bully.
It just seems like you were the size to play a bully. Yeah. That just seems like it.
Yeah. You're always a big kid?
Yeah.
Were you a big kid?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There weren't a lot of options at that age.
They're like, we need a bully. Get that Ethan Suplee in here. Let's go.
And as your first experience with work on a sitcom, it was the greatest fucking job you could ever have. You worked very few hours a week, and it was all kind of fun, and then you shot it, and that was that. Then there was nothing hard about it.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
What was that cast like? Ben Savage and those
all
guys?
Great. All super nice. Yeah.
Yeah, those guys are super, super sweet guys.
Yeah.
Did you repeat your role on Girl Meets World and show up and bully him again?
I didn't.
I would pay to see that.
There was talk about it, but I couldn't make it work.
Okay.
Yeah. My kids wanted me to also, which would have been fun to do that.
That would have been fun.
Yeah.
That's cool. It says, so then first job it says on here is Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah.
So,
liars.
So when you got Boy Meets World, like, how did that come about for you? Like, had you been auditioning for a while, or was it just sort of like?
I was in an acting class, and then the acting class would have, like, here's how you get an agent. You get a headshot, and you send your headshot to a ton of agents.
Back when
you
go by the labels of Samuel French and send them all out.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
And so I did that, and then I had an agent, and, you know, I think there was one day that I had to go, the first day of auditions, it was Melrose Place in Santa Monica at like 11 a.m. and noon in Burbank for Boy Meets World.
Wow.
And I went and did the Melrose Place audition, got a call from my agent. They want you to do Melrose Place. Mm-hmm. And I'm driving to Boy Meets World. And then he calls back and says, oh, they didn't realize you weren't in the union. They're not going to pay to get you in the union, which was really depressing. Yeah. This was day one of auditions.
Yeah.
Wow.
Go to Burbank. Read for Boy Meets World. As I'm leaving, they say, you don't leave, you have to read again. And I was like, whoa. So I fucked it up or something, because I didn't know what that meant. Yeah. Then I went back in, and there were a ton more people, which got me super nervous, read again. And then as I left that time, they said, you start work tomorrow.
And how old were you then?
16 or 17.
Wow. Jeez. So your first day, you booked two roles.
Well, really only one. Melrose Place didn't want to.
On a technicality.
Yeah. Technicality.
We're giving you credit for that one.
I give you credit for Melrose Place.
IMDb won't.
Well, screw them.
Well, yeah. I could go on IMDb and add you on there, and they won't even know.
That's very true.
They're wrong about everything anyway.
That was day one.
People don't realize I was not on Gunsmoke.
Yeah.
Tell us a few shows you want to be on, and we'll put you on.
Yeah, we'll just put you on the shows.
Exactly. Game of Thrones.
Do you want to be on The Wire? Do you want to have been on The Wire? I can put you on The Wire.
Yes.
So here's what's interesting is you look at something like... You look at this, the way that it's laid out, and it's like, okay, you go and you do Boy Meets World, right? Mm-hmm. Then you do an episode of Sister Sister.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who do you like better, Tia or Tamara?
Yeah.
You got to pick.
Pick.
Pick one.
Pick one.
I couldn't possibly.
Come on.
Stranded on a desert island.
I'm a Tamara guy. I don't know if you know that. I'm more of a Tamara.
You're stranded on a desert island, and you can only bring Tia.
You keep Tia, I'll keep Tamara. And then it just jumps. To Mallrats, how do you make the leap? How did you make the leap from being on a couple shows that were basically like Disney or ABC family type shows to then being in Kevin Smith's film? Like, how did that happen?
That just an audition. And that was another bizarre story that I felt very lucky to. Don Phillips cast that, and Don Phillips just takes meetings. He doesn't have you read. You come in and sit and talk with him, which was great because auditioning is brutal. And so you have a conversation with him, and based on that, he has you come back to read for the director. So I met with him, went back to read for the director, and then, and I don't know if he still does, I don't even know if he's still casting movies. I think he might have passed away. I'm not sure. Maybe he didn't. He would do these pizza parties. So after however long of casting, on a Saturday, all the top three or four people that were in contention for a role would show up at his office. And he would do mix and match reading sessions over the course of the whole day, serve all the actors pizza. So we had a day where... every young actor you've ever seen before. Jason, the three people reading for Jay Muse's role were Seth Green, Breckenmeyer, and Jay Muse.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Reading for the role of Jay Muse.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And they went in, and we all had seen Clerks, and they were kind of like, shit, man, I don't feel right about reading for a guy in front of the guy. I kind of have to, yeah.
And it was his name in the script. Like,
Jay. Yeah. It was God. Jay. Yeah. And
I'm not going to get it.
Yeah.
Mallrats was a big step up from Clerks.
Yeah. It was a studio. Yeah. Like there were suits involved in who's going to be in this movie. But
that was basically a test to see if they were going to murder Jay Muse to get the role.
Yeah. You know? So Don Phillips comes out of his office, and he has a crowd of 30 young actors sitting there, all the girls and three people for every role, and says, all roles are open. No matter what you read for prior, you may be reading for something else today, except the role of Willem. Ethan Suplee's playing Willem. Ethan, don't leave because you have to read with other people. And I was holy shit. Yeah, which was like the greatest.
That is amazing.
So I went from total anxiety to like, fuck yeah. But then I realized I couldn't blow it. I could still get fired if I did a shit job.
That's right. I remember hearing about how that's how Coppola did, what's the S.E. Hinton book? Rumblefish or the other one?
Oh, The Outsiders.
The Outsiders. When he was making that film, apparently he got like, it was like Ralph Macchio and Rob Lowe and like every young actor. And there were like, Tom Cruise was in the room and all these people were there and they just traded parts and they read all in a circle.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say he made them rumble.
Made them fight for the part. And that's just like, I guess the way some of these people like to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was bizarre. It was kind of wonderful knowing that I had the part, that I wasn't competing with other people, but...
What you describe is a dream scenario for every overweight boy in the world.
Yeah.
The moment you get there, someone goes, you got the part, there's free pizza, and now you're going to read with a bunch of beautiful women.
Yeah. It was insane.
It doesn't get much better than that.
No.
Wow.
Yeah.
My God.
That was a trip. So that was my first movie.
Wow. Jeez.
Yeah.
What was Kevin like back in the day?
Super nice.
To work with you?
Super nice. Yeah. Great, great guy.
What a sweet guy.
Yeah.
He still is. Very, very nice, right?
Was there... Did it seem like there was a lot of pressure on him from the studio, having come from him making this independent film where he could do whatever he wanted for, like, no money, obviously, with Clerks? What was it, 25 grand, the budget on that?
Yeah.
Something like that. So he made this film that was very good, and then he comes across, and all of a sudden the studio is the one putting the money in. Like, was there a lot of pressure from the outside on that film?
It didn't feel that way. The only studio person that I knew to be there was Jim Jacks, who's a fucking phenomenal producer, has produced some really stellar movies. He has passed away, unfortunately, but he was the only guy there. And, you know, this was my first movie, so I had no idea what was going on behind the scenes. I do know that it changed. The script that we went and shot became lighter. It was a little bit darker, mm-hmm. the first version. But I don't know if that was in the editing process or when that happened.
And that was was that your first time meeting or working with Jason Lee as well?
That was not my first time meeting him. We had the same manager. So we actually drove to that pizza party together.
Wow.
Yeah. Jason Lee at that time lived with Giovanni Ribisi's sister,
Marissa.
Yeah. So I knew him through them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And then you guys have worked together.
I mean, like, we did 100 episodes of My Name is Earl.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you worked on other movies together as well.
Did we?
Yeah.
Wait, before we move on to other movies.
Sure. No, I know. We got to still talk about
Mulder. I have to ask. Yeah.
Yes.
Was it actually a painting of a sailboat?
I never looked. I am able to see those things. It's not hard for me, but I wanted to not be seeing it. So I was trying to mimic what the relaxed state you do with your eyes.
Yeah.
But not do it. Uh-huh. So I never saw it. I mean, later Kevin showed me one and I looked at it and I saw a sailboat, but this was like maybe even years later.
Right.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
Yeah. I never.
So we'll never know.
We'll never know if it actually was.
We'll never know. I mean, you could freeze
frame it. It's in some
prop
house somewhere.
I'm sure you could freeze frame it now and see.
Do you think it would work through a TV?
Somebody should be able to do that. Yeah.
With Blu-ray
someone
technology,
do it and let us know.
If there's like a 4K version of that movie that comes out,
there
we'll
be
able to do it.
Probably. Yeah. Where did you guys shoot that movie?
We shot that in a mall in outside of Minneapolis. Eden Prairie, I think, was the town that the mall was in. And the mall had come on rough times. It wasn't Mall of America because we went there, which is insane. They have a roller coaster inside of it. But it was like the shit mall in that town.
So great.
And half the stores were closed. So our dressing room would be like an old closed down store, and they would just paper up the windows and you'd go in and that was your dressing room. You know, we didn't have trailers, but we had the run of the mall. There were still a couple open stores.
That's gotta be so much fun, man.
What it was fun.
That seems like a really, really good time.
Yeah.
Because, and then, you know, just as an actor too, to be on a set like that, where every which way you look, it feels 100% real. Like, that's got to be.
Now,
in a real mall, yeah.
Did they just shut down this mall while you filmed the movie, or were you filming at night while the mall was open during the day? Or?
We did a ton of night shooting. I think for the big stuff, you know, when they do the dating show and all that, that was all night. A lot of my stuff was at night. But there were scenes done, certainly, where you had to tie in, like, them entering and exiting the mall in daylight. So there were some points
some
when they were shooting and there were people shopping at the mall, because it wasn't desolate. Okay. There were still open businesses in the mall.
Yes, that's like when they did Dawn of the Dead, they filmed that at the Monroeville Mall outside of Pittsburgh, and they would just shut down the mall at night, and then a bunch of zombies would take over the mall. And then I remember hearing that there was like a photo booth in the mall, and people would go in and take pictures of themselves in zombie makeup and then just leave them around the mall from the photo booth, because this is like 1976 or whatever, filming it. In Pittsburgh, and people hadn't really seen zombie movies at that point.
Right.
So then it was just like people walk around, they're like, ugh, like seeing photos randomly.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah.
When you were on that set and doing that film, did you feel nervous at all about doing your first like big studio movie? Like, was there any, did you, like, has there ever been a point in time, and even aside from that movie, has there ever been a point in time where you were on a set, you're doing a movie, and you're like, oh my God, this is such an enormous deal that you kind of panic or you get, it freaks you out a little bit? Has that ever happened?
It was all so new to me. I wasn't thinking in terms of that. So there weren't big nerves for that movie. I was also really young. I was a kid, so I didn't really know what I was doing. I'm just here doing a movie. Mm-hmm. By the way, I'm doing a movie with people who had done one movie on a credit card prior to that.
Yeah.
So we're all kind of in the same, like, oh my God, this is a big movie, you know, and we've taken over a hotel and a mall and, you know, everybody's being given rental cars and I'm a teenager, you know what I mean?
oh my Lord.
I didn't have it then. I since often will feel like I'm on the verge of being fired. And then you shoot a little bit and you kind of go like, okay, well, they can't fire me now. You know, it costs a lot of money to fire me now.
Change the script now.
Yeah.
You're like, day one, can we just shoot something with me in it?
Yeah,
I don't care what it is.
Just go. Get in the can.
Get it out of
there. I'll do background in this scene for right now, okay? Yeah. That's fine.
Establish me.
Now, that movie doesn't really get credit for it, but it sort of started the Stan Lee cameo in movies.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Did
that
you get
was
to
it.
Meet him during that?
Yeah. Yeah. He did not give a shit about meeting me.
Really?
Not at all, but I did meet him.
He wasn't into it?
Not, he did not care at all about meeting me. But I remember the night he shot, pretty much everybody went to the set to meet him.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah. And that was the middle of the night, and they shot him on a bridge in the mall. It was really cool.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And then you continued working with Kevin. You worked with him on Chasing Amy as well, which was pretty soon after that.
Yeah. There was a version of Chasing Amy that he wrote that took place in a high school. So it was like all skewed younger. And in that version, I would have been the lead. Like, I remember the first time he started talking to me about it, he was like, we're going to do this movie. This was prior to Mallrats coming out. Mm-hmm. We're going to do this movie, Chasing Amy. It's going to be awesome. It's about this and this and that. You're in high school. And, you know, I'm still a teenager, so it's not that big of a stretch. And then I think Mallrats came out and, you know, it all got shuffled around and he made the whole thing older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right, right. Yeah. How was that? Was Chasing Amy a good time as well?
Yeah, Chasing Amy. I mean, I worked for one day. I went to New Jersey and hung out with them, and we shot for one day. And it was much different than Mallrats because the budget for Chasing Amy was like $250,000 or something. Very small, like a fraction of the $5 or $6 million that was spent on making Mallrats. So for that, it was like, you know, no rental cars and, you know, no per diem and you fly out to...
No pizza party.
Yeah, nothing like that. Fly yourself out to New Jersey and do this movie.
Yeah.
Hey, what are you drinking over there, Steven?
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt the show with that loud sip, but I'm drinking Fireball Whiskey, the greatest whiskey in the history of the world.
I agree.
I love Fireball whiskey. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can share some with you guys if you guys want some.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
I always bring Fireball whiskey because it's an instant party. It's where the party gets started, and it's sometimes where the party ends because you drink it until you're just, you know,
flying high
and hanging tough.
Yeah.
You know,
like if you're in a boy band.
Yeah. Absolutely. Here, you take a shot.
Okay.
There you go. Whoa. Hey.
Oh, that's good stuff.
That's so good, right? Hey, Glazer, you take a shot. Take one. Take a shot.
Oh, it helped my sunburn.
Oh, yeah, right?
Holy cow, I feel great.
Man, I'll tell you what. There's nothing better for a good afternoon than a shot of Fireball whiskey. The greatest thing to come out of Canada since me. All right, let's get back to the show. After Chasing Amy, you made the leap to American History X. which is pretty soon, kind of pretty soon after that.
Yeah.
That is a totally...
It's a seems huge like shift in
huge
tone.
Shift in tone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you went from light sort of romantic comedy types with those to a really serious drama with Edward Norton, who just seems like he's serious all the time. And
that movie is it's an incredible film.
Like, very intense.
Very, yeah, very intense. What was that like doing a film like that? Or how did that come about? Can you talk about
that? Just auditioned. Just went to, and that was a series of auditions. That wasn't just like one audition and you've got the part. That was reading for the casting director, reading for the director, reading for the studio. That was a bunch of auditions. And I think I finally got the part. I was reading with the writer, and there was a question of, can you be intimidating? Because I'm not really an angry, mean, hateful person.
Yeah.
So, and the writer's a big dude. And I think it was his concern that I couldn't be intimidating. And the character's got to be, you know, while he's kind of an idiot, he's also an intimidating guy.
Yeah.
And they told me all this, and I was like, okay, so I got to amp it up or something. And I like picked the writer up and threw him against the wall and and was like, you know, I'll fucking intimidate you if I have to intimidate you.
Idea.
And then that was that movie.
So is your recommendation for young actors they should go into the room, pick somebody up, and throw them against the wall and they'll get the part?
I mean, you know, if that's
if they're
what
telling
the part
you,
calls,
hey,
yeah,
you gotta
or,
do
yeah.
what
if
you
they're
telling
do,
you, they're not intimidating. Yeah,
yeah. If they're saying we think you're a little bitch, you better pick somebody up and throw them against the wall.
Look, kids, if you're going out for dog with a blog, go in. Pick somebody up, throw them against the rock.
That show's already canceled.
Is it? I don't know. Yeah.
Well, you don't need to worry about
I don't know
that
anything
anymore.
About kids.
You don't have to worry about Dog with a Blog, Ethan.
Right. Yeah. I remember being blown away by that movie. And your character, I'd met that dude in high school like a number of times where I was like, it's like a lot of it is just rhetoric. He's not like really believing that, but it's like this is the group that took him in, so he's gonna be this way, you know. And it's like it was, you know, really kind of, and I felt that way about most of the characters. It was tragic that group had taken them in, and you were like, these would be great people if someone else had included them,
Is that a case where like you read the script and you're like, do I really have to say this? Like, does there anything like that ever go through your mind when you're doing something like that where it's like, I have to say this?
And well, it was a weird thing because the director had us meet with people who actually believed, who felt that way.
Wow.
Which was super uncomfortable. That was super uncomfortable. And, you know, in meeting with them, they really want you to get it right. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to, you can't say to this person who's potentially violent, you understand that we're exposing you. We're not doing you, we're not propping you up. We're trying to make people look at you in the light of like, this exists and this is not good.
Yeah.
They
probably they show their kids the first 45 minutes of the movie and then turn it off. And they're like, look at this great movie about us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so saying those things while it's definitely uncomfortable to say them because it's so repugnant. Yeah. You also want to communicate that this is out there, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Well, I think what you did in that movie, and I think what that movie did is a really terrific, great thing. And it opened a lot of people's minds up to something that they may have thought was past, was still currently a situation.
Now more than ever.
Seriously. In California too, where it's like, you think, oh, this is only going on in certain areas. No, it's going on pretty much everywhere.
When I was 13, 14, I was super into ska and reggae and stuff like that. And we would, at shows in the Valley and even in Hollywood, there would be guys from Orange County who would drive
skinheads
up.
And
yeah,
sort of thing.
And we would fight with them in the parking lot. And then, so I had, that was my interaction with people like that. I knew they existed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the chance to do this movie was even tenfold more important to me because I was like, you know, these people aren't getting the attention they deserve. They should, you know, they should be shamed for their behavior and their actions, and that's not happening. And let's talk about that, you know.
Who did you have to spend the time with most? Like who like actor wise, like who did you work with the closest? Was it Edward that you worked
Norton,
with?
Norton. I think we had the most scenes together. Yeah.
How does he prepare? Like, is he a method guy? Like, does he get super deep into character? Or what was he like on that set?
He had a lot of ideas. They weren't so much directed at me. I was kind of left alone in that sense. I remember he was just lifting a lot of weights and trying to get big for it, you know, get muscular, because he was pretty thin. He's a lanky guy. And I remember, you know, in between takes, he's lifting weights and stuff like that and doing push-ups, which at the time for me, I was like, you're fucking exercising? You know, what the fuck are you doing? You know, I didn't know from exercising back then.
Yeah. You know who else was in that film that like I'm a huge, huge fan of is Fairuza Balk.
Yeah.
Who I don't think gets enough credit and doesn't work enough. Like, I'm such a big fan.
Yeah, she's awesome.
What was she like to be around?
She was really cool. I didn't have a lot to do with her. I think we were on set a couple times together, and she was just very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a terrific. Who was the director on that?
Tony Kay, a real like mad genius guy who wound up having a lot of fights with the studio during the editing process. And I think even put $1 million of his own money into reshoots.
Whoa. Yeah. Really?
Yeah. And then, you know, at one point, wanted the whole thing to be narrated by a homeless woman, and the studio was kind of like, that's a different movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Whoa.
That was wild. That was wild. But I think it came out pretty good.
Yeah, no, it's a terrific, terrific film. It really is. Move on down. I know that you were in Dogma and you did a voice in Dogma. Who did you do the voice of in that movie?
The Golgothan, the shit demon.
You did? Oh my nice. God, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So once you work with Kevin, did it feel like did he just keep bringing you?
You're
back
sort of
to,
just in the family.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of like, what's Ethan's part in this movie? Okay, in this movie, you know. And then he produced a bunch of movies, and I would do random stuff in them.
Yeah. One of my favorite films, which is a ridiculous movie, is Tom Green's film Road Trip, which you were in.
That was a really bizarre thing. I read for Tom Green's part and then got Remember the Titans, which I think ultimately is a better movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I went to do Remember the Titans. And while shooting that in Atlanta, Road Trip started shooting in Athens. And I was called saying, hey, we got Tom Green for that role, but we're putting together all the people he's touring, and they're all just local people, and we want somebody with some experience to come and do some rifting with him, some improv with him. Will you do that? And I was like, look, I'm shooting nights on a football movie, and Athens is a couple hours away from Atlanta, so I guess in theory it could work, but like, you know, I mean,
it's a marathon.
Yeah.
Schedule's very tight.
So I would go from shooting Remember the Titans at night, there would be a car at set, they would drive me to Athens, and day one I got out to set, and Tom Green is doing his thing, and I start improvising with him, and he goes, so what? That's not in the script. What are we doing here? and the director was kind of like, yeah, okay, so just say what's in the script. And I was like, why am I fucking here?
Why are you here?
I worked all night, and I'm here to do improvising with Tom Green. And I shouldn't be here. I should not be. He was not into it.
Oh, my God. That's so funny.
He was not into it at all.
Let this guy do it. Why do I have to drive 2 hours?
This is psychotic.
Oh, my God. That's hysterical. Have you guys ever seen each other or worked together since?
No. And I don't necessarily think it's his fault. They didn't prepare. Like, he was not given the same pitch that I was given.
Sprung it on him.
Yeah. That's so funny.
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord.
That's not in the script.
Yeah. What is he saying?
What is this madness?
Yeah.
Because you think of him as just being a guy who could just roll with it.
Yeah.
His whole career is just him screwing with people. Like, you'd figure he'd be into it.
Oh, my God. That's so funny. So you got to work with Denzel Washington twice then.
Three times?
What other movie?
I almost became the Corys.
Oh wow! Yeah, no, I could see that. I could see that. Yeah, because you worked with them on Remember the Titans and John Q. What other one are we looking at?
Unstoppable.
Unstoppable. Oh, holy crap!
Yeah.
So you have like a relationship, like you know this man. This is you guys know. You've worked.
I don't know if anybody can really know Denzel. But if anybody does, I guess I do.
Wow.
And yeah, Unstoppable is a Tony Scott.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was he like?
He was awesome.
Yeah.
He was so awesome. What a great guy.
So badass.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
He was an amazing director.
Yeah. Seriously. What an incredible guy.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Did he seem troubled at the time when you were working with him?
Not at all.
Just seemed
not
all
from,
together.
Yeah. Not from anything I could see. No.
Yeah. Wow. There's a film that you did that is like, there was a point in time where I was living. I think we all kind of did this at one point in time, where like you're living in some shitty apartment and you got like no money, but you got like a couple DVDs and you just watch those DVDs again and again and again.
Yeah.
And I was living in some shitty apartment in San Diego, and I had a couple DVDs, and one of them was Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Amazing.
Such an amazing film.
Yeah.
One of them was Office Space, and one of them was the movie Blow.
Yeah.
And so I watched Blow like a bajillion times at some point in time, right? You're fantastic in that movie.
Thanks.
But like, what an extensive and like crazy, that must have been crazy working on something like that, like especially with someone like Johnny Depp. Like what was that film like?
That was an awesome experience. It was just fun, you know. That was one of the few times that you know, in between takes they would turn on music, and Ted Demme really tried to create an atmosphere, and when we went to when we shot in Mexico, we all stayed together and had dinner together every night, and he really curated a solid group of guys and girls and people to you know, work together. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Now, at what point,
fuck, I keep getting bummed out. All these people have passed away.
I know.
Johnny Depp passed?
No, yeah, Johnny's still alive. Ted Demme.
Did that just happen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tony Scott.
All these people that hired him and passed away. That's the problem.
It's my fault.
It's your fault.
It might be.
It's you hire Eddie Suplee, and then your days are numbered.
Shit.
You're like The Ring.
It's like, yeah.
I mean, we're going back to the 90s.
Yeah, it was a long time
ago.
It's not your fault.
It's not your fault.
Time.
It's
not my
fault.
Yeah.
It's not my
probably
fault.
Probably time.
Yeah.
It's probably
most likely not your fault.
Right. Most likely.
It could be my fault.
It's a chance.
Back to the human skulls.
Flashback to you dropping off like cream cheese and cigarettes at their trailers. Right. Thanks for getting me the part.
Like, you didn't throw all of them against the wall, did you?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Okay, good. Oh,
just
my
checking.
God. So at some point during this period of time before My Name Is Earl, because that's all kind of coming up into the same time period here, at some point in here you lost like a large amount of weight.
Yeah.
How much did you lose?
Let's see, like close to 200 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how is it that you picked it up, Stephen?
Well, you know, I'm very good at things. And, one of those things is
cake.
Cake. Yeah, I'm very good at cake and cooking.
Yes.
But how did you make how did that happen?
It was
magic.
A real fucking gypsy real, real story.
Did you say a gypsy cursed you thinner?
Yeah. From the Stephen King book.
Ah, yes. Ah, from the old Stephen King.
You know, in fairness, like, I was not, like, in Remember the Titans, I was way too big to be playing football. But it's high school, so they kind of got to let everyone on the team. That's how I justified
right.
it.
Right.
But I never really, thought about losing weight. Like, it wasn't something that I dwelled on. Yeah.
And well, also, you were a working actor.
Yeah.
And you're... And you'd been a working actor at that size for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't really make sense to...
And you kind of feel like, if it's not broke, don't fix it. If you're getting work.
I mean, I just never thought about it. I never thought I should lose weight. It just was not something that, you know, if anybody ever made fun of me, I would fight them and happily fight them. You know, I wasn't like getting picked on. I'm a big dude, but I'm also not a pushover. So, you know, the few times when I was a kid that I was made to feel shamed, I would just fight you if you were a dude, you know.
Right.
And other than that, I had girlfriends and, you know, there was never something that I wanted to do that I couldn't do.
Right.
So it wasn't a huge problem in my life. Prior to Cold Mountain, I was in talks to do a movie, a Robin Hood movie with Jim Caviezel, and I was going to play Little John, and it was all set to go, and then it fell apart. Mm-hmm. And on one of the flights to Romania to make Cold Mountain, I ran into Jim Caviezel in the airport. We had never met, but we knew who each other were because we were going to do this movie. And then on the airplane, we were both flying to Frankfurt and then catching different flights to different random Eastern European cities. And he got up and came and sat with me on the airplane. And for 6 hours, talked to me about how, and I didn't really understand it at first. I thought maybe it was because I was drinking in the lounge or something like that, but talked to me about how in his life he tries to emulate Jesus Christ and finally got to the point of, you're not doing that. You're not emulating Jesus Christ. And
is this before he played him in the movie?
Yes, but he was super into
He was
Jesus
method
Christ.
Acting before and, he even
and,
got the part.
And look, what I took away from it, and basically it was like, you're unhealthy. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not walking the right path. Now, it has nothing to do with Jesus Christ. It has nothing to do with, like, I'm going to make Jim Caviezel right. I got off the plane and thought, I never want anyone to feel that they can have that conversation with me again. That was truly, I was like, that will never happen again. Because I was trapped on an airplane for 6 hours listening to a guy tell me, basically, I'm going to hell because I'm not leading the right life. Now, look, I think it's a very kind thing he did now. You know, I would never do that.
Can we still put that Robin Hood movie together? Wrong.
But it's amazing how people feel they have permission to do that.
He talked to me for 6 hours.
Like, can we get that Robin Hood movie to happen just so I can watch the behind the scenes making of? Because I want to see that now.
Right. The commentary is like forever long.
I got off the plane and called who is now my wife. And cried and was like, this fucking guy trapped me for 6 hours.
Holy shit.
His wife was on the plane and he left her seat to sit with me. I had an empty seat next to me. Yeah. And I like, what do I say? I'm going to go sit in the bathroom for 10 hours? I mean, we're from LA to Frankfurt. And I was like, I don't want that conversation ever again. I need to figure this out.
That's 20 minutes tops conversation.
I mean,
get to the point.
Yeah.
And, you know,
you're fat, lose weight.
And
you're going to die.
Like, you know, another
Jesus
thing...
doesn't love you because you're not.
And this guy on an airplane got up and voluntarily sat next to the fat dude.
Yeah.
Nobody does that on an airplane.
You know, Jim, that's another thing true. Jesus doesn't do is jaw ass people on a plane for 6 hours. about how they're living their life. Right.
Yeah. I called my wife. And she said, we can do this. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to go on a diet for, you know, I made a bunch of trips back and forth while shooting Cold Mountain. And she was like, as of now, no sugar, no pasta, no bread. And that was the beginning of it. And then, you know, I just it didn't stop for a long time.
Is that good? Like, do you have like a lot of dietary restrictions to this day? Like things that you just don't eat? Or?
I go back and forth. There was a time where I was racing bicycles and actually competitively racing bicycles, and I got super thin and actually looked unhealthily thin, which is weird. That lasted like a week, but it took a while to get there. And at that point, I wasn't working. I don't know, maybe I didn't give it time, but I felt uncomfortable being that thin. That was like 100 pounds from where I
am. Are you going to have a conversation with me for 6 hours now?
Yeah. Is that what we're doing? You're very thin.
You need to put some weight on.
You really do.
Yeah. Matt, your weight has nothing to do with why you're living your life wrong.
Yeah.
You're just living your
plenty
life
of things
wrong.
I'm doing wrong.
Yeah, I find I'm either gaining weight or losing weight. And so, yes, I have dietary restrictions now and have for a long time, but then they won't last forever, you know.
You and me met at some point at
Weight Watchers.
No, we met through Eric the Trainer.
Yeah.
And the reason that I started working out with Eric the Trainer was because I had heard that he had worked out with you and that you had dropped weight working with him.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. Well, at the time,
because we were about to have that conversation with Steven for 6 hours, like you were. I'm close to four.
Yeah, I was in the high 300s, and I was, but I was having really bad health problems during it. Like, I was on a lot of medication, and I was having to take all these different types of pills, and I was shooting myself up with insulin and all sorts of shit that like was bad news. Yeah. And I was not in California. I was in Vancouver doing a movie, and I didn't have a doctor, so I had to go find doctors, and it was just a mess. Yeah. Like,
his
mess.
Dancing really suffered.
Yeah,
more than anything.
My tap dancing
was a
mess.
That was where you could notice.
Yeah. Yeah. I just was missing beats.
Yes, Steve.
Yeah. I was missing beats.
You were never a rerun.
No, I wasn't.
You were not like
rerun. He's the greatest fat dancer of all time.
Yeah, really from the lockers. From the
My wife was like, here's your diet. You don't eat sugar anymore, and you go, and what we do in Hollywood is you find a personal trainer, and she found Eric.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
He's incredible.
Great.
Yeah,
he's
I worked out with him today.
Yeah.
Yeah,
this
really?
Is like 15 years later, I'm still working out with him.
That's incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, such a good guy. And
he's so good at making it seem possible.
Yeah.
You know?
Mike and me went together and did a little fat guy team up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And worked out with him. But it was great. It was great. It was really it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a good guy.
He is. He's really cool. Then did you feel like once did that affect roles or work for you?
I feel like there's a place I can get to where I'm still the big guy. And so that's the most comfortable place I feel, and so therefore I work, you know. I think it probably did, because when I got really thin, but I was also riding a bicycle 8 hours a day, so didn't have time to go and like, let's be an actor, and that lasted for 2 years.
Well, I mean, look, I mean,
because you can be the healthy fat guy is what you want to be.
Yeah,
that guy where like you're a little big but you're not.
Yeah,
you know,
I was way too big. Jim Caviezel, in his defense, when he had that conversation with me, I was insanely big, you know. So
what
he was
you,
just worried about me.
Do you remember
me.
What you were at your biggest?
A
base.
Lot heavier than I am
was,
now.
Was the airplane just going in circles? Because it was
And when he sat next to me, it was a fucking wrap.
Oh, jeez Louise.
We busted a tire.
Oh, my God. That's insane.
Yeah.
Did he, like, slap the peanuts out of the stewardess's hand?
I remember the meal happened.
Thou shalt not eat peanuts. Yeah.
While he was sitting with me, the meal happened, and I was just like, I don't know what to
I
do.
I guess I'm not.
I can't eat this while he's sitting here judging me.
I'll have the fish, I guess.
Yeah. That's amazing.
That would have been great to just to double down. And I'll have two meals, please.
Yeah.
And just start stuffing your face. Jesus, right?
I randomly one day was walking in New York and like walked through the set of Person of Interest and was like, I'm going to fucking tell this guy.
Yeah.
But then it ultimately turned into a thank you, you know?
Yeah.
It is a thank you, you know? I don't ever want that conversation again, but I appreciate that he had it with me. None of it had to do with me trying to embody Jesus Christ, but I respect his position, you know?
Yeah.
Sure,
that it wasn't coming from a place of malice or anything like
no.
that.
Didn't something happen to Jim Caviezel while he was shooting Passion of the Christ? Wasn't there like Didn't he get?
Well, he was crucified.
Yeah. No, like, didn't? Yeah. Well, I know, but besides being crucified, rough. Didn't like something happen? Like, wasn't there like an like someone got? There was like an electrical storm on the set or something really. Matt, you look. Tell me if you find anything about this.
Our crack team of researchers is about to see look into this.
To the Googles.
Matt's
to the Googles, Matt. To the Googles. Yes. Cold Mountain, by the way, is an insanely good movie.
Oh, yeah. Man, that was a good movie.
Award-winning.
If you type in Passion of the Christ, you know one of the suggested searches is Passion of the Christ 2.
Really?
The Return.
That's a great film.
Passion of the Christ
also.
2, The Electric Boogaloo. Oh, I would watch
it. I guess technically it would be The Return. Yeah.
Hysterical.
And it's not Passion of the Christ. It was a different one that he was.
Oh, that's right. It was.
No, it was
Passion of the Christ.
Passion
of the Christ.
Right, you're right.
You're thinking of the Scorsese one.
Yes. Oh, yeah. With Willem Dafoe. My personal favorite Jesus. Willem Dafoe. I have to pick.
I'm going to pray to Willem
Dafoe.
You're the
only person in history that thinks that Willem Dafoe is the best Jesus.
He's the best Jesus, in my opinion.
He was a damn good Jesus.
The most terrifying of all Jesus.
We all agree Heston's
it might be
the best
because
Moses.
He made me a mixtape with Depeche Mode's Your Own Personal Jesus on it. That might have something to do with it.
Oh, my God.
Best Jesus and best Green Goblin so far.
Yes. Absolutely. Anything? You find anything yet?
I'm looking. Hold on.
Back to work, Matt.
Back to work, Matt.
I'm still looking.
Jeez,
come
on. Pull it together.
Laughing and joking.
Keep going.
When you're doing Cold Mountain, that movie won Oscars. Yeah? That's a big movie.
Yeah.
That's the silliest sentence you've ever heard. That movie won Oscars, right?
Won Oscars.
That was a big movie.
That's a big movie.
Big movie. It's like my granddad talking about movies.
Yeah. you did a bunch of movies, huh? Some sort of things with the
movie won an Oscar.
What was a big movie? What are the cameras involved?
I have done my research.
All right.
And I will read to you from movieaccidents.wordpress.org.
Okay, read it.
A few of the accidents that occurred include Caviezel suffering from hypothermia while shooting in the winter, as well as pneumonia, a dislocated shoulder, and accidentally being thrashed during a whipping scene. Although these mishaps appear brutal, one accident involving Caviezel and assistant director Jan Michelini was so unexpected that it was actually considered a sign from God. Both Caviezel and Michelini were struck by lightning during the filming of the scene of the Sermon on the Mount.
There we go.
Luckily, neither were injured, although this was the second time that Michelini had been struck.
Well, there you go.
Michelini's should play the lottery, man.
Yeah.
Two times.
I hope they caught that on film. Jesus getting struck by lightning.
Right?
Yeah.
That, if that's not in the movie, why are we here?
What's the point
of any of this?
Yeah. Deleted scenes.
When you finally get a chance when you and Jason Lee go off and you start making this wonderful television show and you start spending all this time together. Was this I'm jumping past Butterfly Effect.
Okay.
Which
that's fine.
By the way,
we should.
Is a terrifying movie.
Yeah.
Like, that movie gave me nightmares.
I think the word starts with tear that I think about that
no,
movie.
No, that's not a bad movie.
It bummed me out, but in a good way. Like, if that makes sense. I wouldn't put that on the poster or anything, right. but
this movie bummed me out in the best possible way.
Roger
the Butterfly Effect. It'll bum you out.
In a good way.
In a good way. In the nicest
it's
possible
a big
way.
Picture.
Yeah. It won Academy Awards.
It got awards and things. Ain't that correct? Was that the first movie that you was a Cold Mountain the first movie that you'd been in that had won like won Oscars and was
I think it's the first one that won. Edward Norton was nominated for American History X, but
of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a big man. My God.
That's a big movie.
That's a big movie.
That,
I keep
that
saying
that one
it
was
again.
A big movie, too.
It's I like, know. My
didn't
God.
Win, but it got nominated.
Well, you got the Nicole Kidmans, right? Who else is in there? The Renee Zellwegers?
Yeah. It's reminding me of my dad who insists that George C. Scott is in everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
George C. Dad. Scott was in it.
He's been dead for 15 years.
Yeah.
No,
I'm pretty
George
sure.
George C. Scott was in Deadpool.
He did a scene.
He was Deadpool.
I'm pretty sure
he
he's
was
in
dead
the movie.
Yeah. In Deadpool.
Did you spend a lot of time with the Nicole Kidmans and the Renee Zellwegers and the Jude Laws?
We all kind of were in In Bucharest, no. In Bucharest, we were in a massive hotel. So unless you were working with them, you didn't run into them. But then when we moved up into the mountains, they had us in this bed and breakfast that kind of just got taken over by the cast. So everybody who's in the movie was in and out of this one bed and breakfast. So at that point, we spent time together. Yeah, like Thanksgiving dinner, you know, Nicole Kidman cooked the turkey.
Wow,
my God.
Is she a good cook?
The turkey was good.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where she got a turkey in the mountainside of Romania, but she found a turkey.
She's Nicole Kidman.
Might
she can make it happen.
Might have been flown in from America.
Might have got one flown in for it. Yeah. That's
damn
possible.
Good.
Anybody's even been on Australian turkey they flew in. That's the power she has.
Free range.
She's Australian. She might have hunted it.
Yeah.
That's very possible.
Yeah.
What about Zellweger? What was...
Really cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, really cool.
Yeah, funny lady.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I found spending time with Ray Winstone and Brendan Gleeson was the most fun. Just sitting up at night with them. That was a good time.
Oh, that must have been awesome.
Yeah.
Was there any drinking done?
I wasn't drinking. They might have had a sip or two. Yeah.
Do you drink? Do you drink?
No.
All right. Well, we do have a present for you.
Okay.
Does your wife drink? Is she?
Yes.
Yeah?
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Right,
well, present for your wife.
She's a real regular boozer.
All right. Well, we have this is the Nighttime Show backpack.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It has all of all of our faces on it.
That is awesome.
And then inside the backpack.
Feels that it's not empty.
It's not empty. And inside the backpack, we have a present for your wife. It's a bottle of our finest Canadian, the finest Canadian cinnamon whiskey in the world, Fireball whiskey.
Oh, yeah.
It's the drink of champions.
She's going to love this.
Just a delicious ordeal.
Yes.
A delicious ordeal.
That's
it'll bum you out
in the best possible way.
It's the perfect thing to drink when watching the Butterfly Effect.
Yes. Yes.
So then when you go on to doing My Name is Earl, and you did many an episode.
120 episodes or something?
Yeah.
No, not close to 100. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if we got to 100, like 98.
Okay.
I think. And
96 episodes.
How many were the his list on there? How many items were supposed to be on that list? I can't remember what the number was.
I think at some point there were like 250 things on the list. I mean, the list, I don't know if, I actually don't know if Greg Garcia ever wrote it out, but there were a shitload of things on
the list.
It's
like the Ferengi Rules of Acquisition where like there were like 100 of them and they don't. There's like 40 of them we actually heard about.
Yeah.
Sure, well, up to that point,
just like that,
just like that nerdy reference for 12 of you who remember the Ferengi.
Like, up to that point in your career, like it had been, I mean, some TV in the beginning, but then mostly movies.
Yeah.
Was there any nerves or feelings about going to television, or was that just not as big a deal? Were you just like, screw it, let's just go do the show? And especially because it's Jason.
Yeah, I mean, it's Jason. I knew him. The pilot, the script for the pilot. I would always have there's seasons, pilot season. I don't even know if that happens anymore, but there used to be pilot season. Now it seems like they're shooting pilots all year long.
Yeah.
But this would be like every January, here's the 200 potential TV shows that will be new this year. And my agents would send me stacks of scripts, and I didn't find any of them to be humorous. I didn't really read a lot. I just wasn't interested or trying to pursue that. That year, my wife was pregnant with the kid who's now 12.
Wow.
And I had kept having to leave town. And like one year, her and the two older kids came to New Zealand and hung out there, but briefly because it interfered with school. And Romania, my wife came out in the beginning of Cold Mountain and stayed for like 2 days and said, I'm never bringing the kids here. You have to come home as much as possible. So I did like 11 round trips to Romania.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was a nightmare.
That's a brutal schedule.
Yeah, it was awful. Yeah. So for me, it was that point where she's pregnant. She's now not going to want to travel anywhere. And I just said to my agents, I think we got to do TV because
that's
you're here. It's a real job. You see your kids and your wife every day. And in looking through scripts that year, My Name is Earl was by far the funniest one that I read. I didn't read every pilot script, but all the ones that had a potential role for me, that one was the best.
It's a very good show. Like, I didn't watch it when it was on just because it wasn't in my schedule. I was doing a lot of open mics at that time.
They moved it around a lot, too.
But, like, it was one that when it hit syndication, I watched every episode of the show because then it was like a time when I could watch. I was like, I should have watched this when it was on. This is a great show. Like, I really enjoyed it.
I liked it, too. Yeah, it was a lot of fun to make. Yeah.
Yeah, that must have been so cool, too.
I caught it on
too.
Netflix and just burned through it in, like, a week. Yeah. You know, it was a lot of fun.
A lot of fun.
And getting a chance to work with your friend, too.
Yeah.
And
it did what I really liked, situation. Too, where, like, each episode would kind of showcase a character actor.
Yeah.
You know, and it was mostly about the core cast, but it would kind of bring out someone new and kind of go, this is what this person can do.
Yeah.
You may have seen them do a little thing here or there, but it really, like, I felt like anyone who was on that series, it gave them a leg up, you know?
Yeah, I got to work with my father-in-law, Jeffrey Lewis, who's an amazing character actor, my sister-in-law, Juliette Lewis, who's just an amazing actress, Giovanna Ribisi, Dax Shepard came on the show. We had so many
like a lot of people that at the time weren't really known at all and are now like really starting to take off
I love Juliette Lewis.
She's awesome.
She's the sweetest.
Yeah,
I saw you guys together when did we all ran comedy. Into each other at stand-up at when I opened for TJ Miller at the Laugh Factory.
Yes.
And that was the when you guys when I saw you guys all there.
Yeah.
And she was so nice.
She's a nice girl.
Yeah. I saw her perform. Did you come with me to that show where we saw her perform as the lead singer of Guns N' Roses?
I did not.
She's a legit rock and roll singer.
She had an album that came out. Like she had a band
The
there,
Licks.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was it was like a there was like a night that we went to and they had the rest of the band of Guns N' Roses aside from Axl. Everyone else was there and then they just kept bringing
I was at that show. Yeah, cuz that's the one where Billy Ray Cyrus
that's the one.
Paradise City to close out the night.
Yeah, oh, bitch. Wow. And they it was the guy from
this guy from Slipknot.
Slipknot. And so that guy's singing and then he goes, "Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Billy Ray Cyrus." And then Billy Ray Cyrus comes out with like a tambourine. He's like, "Hey, y'all." And everyone's like, "What is going on?" And then they do Paradise City. And he's like dancing around with a tambourine. And everyone in the audience was like, "What are we watching? What the fuck is Billy Ray Cyrus playing with the tambourine?"
Yeah.
But that's what you remember.
Yeah,
that's all we remember.
It was a dolphin charity.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. I'm so weird. before we wrap things up, we got to talk about a couple enormous things.
These are big pictures.
These are big pictures, these films. We recently had Henry Zebrowski on our show.
The best.
Who
I fucking love him.
He's so damn cool.
Yeah.
And you guys worked together on The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yes.
Good Lord. That movie.
It won awards.
It won all sorts of awards and things. Yeah. What a great film.
What a big movie.
That's
a
did big it win awards?
I don't know.
Yeah.
George C.
Did.
Scott won an award. A lot of people. It's a very big picture.
What a great film.
Very big picture.
Now, on the internet, it says that you've known DiCaprio for a long time. Is that true? Did you guys know? Have you guys known each other prior
long
to this?
Time, yeah.
What a that set must have been the craziest, most fun set to be on. Was it a lot of fun being with all those guys and just messing around? And did it seem like a lot of fun?
Yes, we had a lot of fun. Honestly, for me, I have a wife and four daughters, so the kind of fun you might be thinking of only gave me anxiety.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
sure.
Get down from there.
Yeah.
Wolf of Wall Street just seems like, isn't that just Leo's life in general? Like, isn't it just how he lives most of the time is what it sort of seems like?
When figuring out contracts for that movie, there was a nudity clause of you must be nude in this movie. And I was like, Nobody wants to see me nude. And they said, listen, everybody has to sign this. So then, you know, in the script, there are multiple orgies. And I'm going like, what the fuck am I going to be expected to do? So as we're gearing up to start rehearsing these orgies, I'm literally having a panic attack because Right. Whether, you know, none of my kids are going to see that movie now. They're kids. But one day, if they put it on, I can't.
You don't want to traumatize.
I don't want to be in an orgy. Like, can I we call never need to be in an orgy. Like,
can we call Stephen Glickman to be my body double?
I'm in.
And so I just start coming up with what else could I be doing during an orgy that is
it's
not
just
being
as fun.
A part of an orgy. Like, yeah, maybe I'm just there filming the orgy or something. But I pitched to Scorsese, like, what if you're coming through and everybody's doing crazy shit and I'm asleep and or reading a book or
maybe I'm making sandwiches for the orgy.
And he went for it and I didn't have to. And that was another one of the greatest days of my life. I did not have to participate in that fucking orgy.
Wow.
Yeah. That's the opposite of every other actor is like, they're seen like they're supposed to be reading a book. They're like, what if we came through and I was actually in the orgy instead of reading a book?
Were you reading a book in the scene?
We shot it like three or four different times and I've never seen the movie, but I think one of them I have a cowboy hat on and a sleep mask because we're on a plane and so I'm asleep, and then one I'm having a nice conversation with another gentleman. Mm-hmm. I don't know, that might have another implication, but it's not participating in an orgy.
Sure.
And one I'm reading a book. I don't know what was actually used, but
have
I don't
you
know
not watched that movie in particular or just not watch your work?
I don't watch my work, so I'm not calling out that
so like
movie.
Are there like a So, like, all these movies that we've been and things we've been talking about, like, have you just not seen most of them?
I've not seen any of them.
So, wait.
What?
Wait,
wow.
Since when? Like, when did you stop watching yourself?
Like, you must have, like, the first. You never watched Mallrats.
Since Mallrats. You've never seen Mallrats.
I went
Boy
to
Meets
the premiere
World.
And walked in and took pictures and then went to the bathroom
did,
for 2 hours.
Did you watch Boy Meets World when
no.
it was on
what?
Back?
Wow. Why?
Because I'm highly critical of myself, and once.
But you're really good.
Well, okay, thank you.
You'll have to take your word for it.
Because there's no power to fix anything, I don't want to know that there are any mistakes.
Oh, okay. I get that. I mean, look, you're not alone in that. A lot of actors have done that as well. But
it's the opposite. I mean, you still watch yourself at reruns of Big Time Rush from 8 years ago.
I constantly rewatch myself.
Now,
back
to the orgy. You were on a plane during the orgy?
We're on a plane. There was an orgy on a plane.
You should have pitched you and Jim Caviezel talking.
just with a Bible and talking
him
about
telling
God.
You about Jesus. Yeah. You're not living your life right. Yeah. Look around.
That's a great, that's a great fucking pitch.
Jesus.
I bet Scorsese would have gone for that too.
He would have.
Can we get him?
Is he available? He would have into it. Okay. One last one. Chance is out right now.
Chance, yes. I have watched the preview for Chance, which I find to be very good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, look who's not so self-critical.
I started Instagram a week and a half ago.
Can people follow you on it, or do you not like?
Well, here's the thing.
Do you not look at your own Instagram?
You have one of my daughters posts all the pictures.
Okay.
But somebody made a fake Instagram account, mm-hmm. and so I talked to somebody and said, "Well, I want how it's not
how do
right
I do
that
an official
a fake
one.
Yeah, I'll do a real one." And they said you have to make a public Instagram account. And then if you can prove that you're really you, they'll take down the fake one.
And they'll give you the blue check mark.
Right. I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, we're 10 days into it.
So which one is yours?
@eSupplee is the real.
Okay, because there's _ Ethan Supplee _, and that's fake. And there's Ethan Supplee _, and that's fake.
Fake. Everything that is not @eSupplee is fake. They're fake.
What about on Twitter? Do you have a Twitter?
Twitter, I'm real. Yes, Twitter is me.
Yours on Twitter is Ethan
Just
Supplee.
My name, yeah.
Okay.
All right. I got to that before the fakesters could do it.
Well, you had 449 followers, but now you have 450 followers. Congratulations.
Wow.
Hey,
look at that.
Very nice.
Yeah.
You're the first non-Japanese rabbit I've followed on Instagram in like a month.
Amazing.
Okay, so if people want to follow you in real life, your home address.
Yeah.
Now, if people want to follow you on Twitter.
Twitter.
Your Twitter
it's my
is
name, Ethan Supplee.
Ethansupplee. Okay, and then on
Instagram is very new. I'm still figuring it out. It's a lot of just working out and shooting guns. That's pretty much what we got so far.
You like shooting guns? What kind of guns do you like shooting?
I like the show Chance. I had to learn to be like a real badass, so I got to train with knives and train with guns with like military dudes, and
what?
It's been awesome. Yeah, and we just finished the second season and have no idea if we'll do a third, but I actually enjoyed the martial arts aspect of the training I do. So I've continued training.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
You look like a badass on that show. Holy crap. It's amazing. And are you wearing a bulletproof vest?
There may be some pictures of me in a bulletproof vest. Some of the courses I've
I think
done
we should all have to wear a bulletproof vest.
I agree.
I think it's very cool when you wear a bulletproof vest.
Yeah.
And I wore one once. Great experience.
Yeah.
People would see me, they go, look at that guy.
That guy is wearing
a bulletproof vest right now.
The cops don't love it.
The cops are not a fan. They're
why
not a,
do you have
I
this?
Why are you wearing
it? I got it on Hollywood Boulevard.
Exactly. Your Instagram is just ESUPLEE.
Until Instagram decides to give me one of the fake accounts that have stolen my name.
Yeah, well,
we'll see.
You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, it's all new. Pictures are weird.
They are weird. You started the Snapchatting? You started doing the Snapchatting
That's
yet?
That's way too millennial for me.
It's very millennial.
Yeah.
I know.
I'm an old man. I have kids in college. It's no Snapchatting for me.
Kids in college?
Yeah.
That's incredible, man. Yeah. How old is your oldest now?
My oldest is 21.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
21.
She goes to school in New York, and she approves all. I do the story. There's a story on Instagram.
Sure.
And that I am in control of. But all of the pictures that go up, she approves because she understands how to do it without making you look like a total idiot.
Wow, really?
Yeah. I mean,
she's your social media
person.
That's really sweet.
She is an official millennial.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That would be very helpful in this career.
Yeah.
You know?
I have one in my back pocket. Yeah.
Good for you. Yeah. They're very hard to figure out. You know, you don't want to hurt anyone's feelings.
No. Yeah. I mean, you know? Yeah. Gosh.
I'm constantly hurting feelings.
Everyone's offended by everything.
Right.
Yeah. What are you going to do? Matt, where can people follow you on the internet?
You can go to funnymatt.com, find links to everything there. Or if you want to tell me how much you love the butterfly effect, even though I don't, you can do that at mattwalkersucks.com.
I love the butterfly effect. I think that Ashton Kutcher.
With Ashton Kutcher, I'm out. No, I can't. I can't.
Wait, no, I do The Ranch sometimes.
I like him on The Ranch. And Danny Masterson's
on that
show. Yeah,
Fucking Sam Elliott, bro. And Deborah Winger.
You got to give that one a chance. Have you watched The Ranch?
I have
tried
not.
Watching. All right, you got to watch an episode of that show.
Listen,
you got to check it out.
Sam Elliott and Deborah Winger. Academy Award, at least not.
Those are big shows. Those are big people with big awards.
Yes.
I love that. You got to check that out. Okay. However, Ashton Kutcher as Steve Jobs is still one of the funniest things that's ever happened in the history of movie making. I love that movie so much. It made me laugh so many times.
Is that the one you were up for Woz in? Or?
I was up for Woz in that movie.
I like to imagine Steve Jobs tripping on acid.
Yes.
He prefers that version.
Probably.
Yeah.
That's a lot more fun of a movie. Yeah. He had a lot more fun with that movie than
that's the Steve Jobs that decided not to go with cancer treatment and just eat vegetables instead. That's
Steve
how you understand
Jobs.
That Steve
Bad
Jobs.
Decision, Steve Jobs. Yeah.
I did like Seth Rogen's version better than Dan Fogler though on that a little bit.
Yeah,
I thought because Rogen is more fun to watch. I think. I mean, but he's good too. Dan Fogler is
amazing. Yeah.
Dan Fogler in what's it called? The movie about the mystical creatures and where to find them. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
Awesome. He kills in that movie. Yeah.
That movie was a lot of fun. I liked that movie.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. Do you watch a lot of movies?
I try to see every movie.
Really?
Except the ones you're in.
Yeah.
So, but there's a handful that I'm not in.
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple.
So there's a few. Here and there.
You get to see like 6-7 movies a year or something like that.
Exactly. No, I will only go to the Arclight.
Yeah.
And I will only sit in one of 8 seats.
I'm the same way.
And actually, I will only go during the day on a weekday when there are no other people. My favorite thing is like one other guy that I have to worry if he's going to kill me during the movie, so it increases the tension.
Yeah. Sure,
that's
yeah.
the best.
Is there a type of movie that you have not done? Like I noticed by looking through your stuff, you have not done like a superhero. You haven't played a superhero yet, have you?
No.
I mean, you were in Fanboys.
Like I was Harry Knowles.
Yeah.
He's a superhero of sorts.
Yeah, yes. But you, like, of like, calories.
If they make he's another, look, they're going to make another Spider-Man movie. Shouldn't he be the Rhino?
Like yeah, like that would be great. Playing Rhino or Thing or
Beast,
any of these from the X-Men.
I've, oh my God. There's never a lot of read comic yeah. books, so you guys are just saying words. I don't know what any of them means. Rhino is an African animal.
Yeah,
that's true. What about Star Wars?
Please
or
don't
Star
say
Trek?
That in the audition. Right. Please don't.
What is
I am
this?
Aware
am I playing
that a rhino?
An animal?
Am I playing an actual rhino?
Where are my horns?
Just Gore, the casting director.
Now I desperately want you to play the yeah. rhino just to see that audition.
Is he half rhino, half man?
No, he has a cyborg suit that gives him powers much like a rhino.
Right.
He can run, and he has a horn on his head.
Right.
You know, that's where the similarities end, I think.
Great. I'm
fucking
in.
Nerds,
but he fights
right.
Spider-Man.
What a no, bunch I'm of in. I'm in. I love Star Wars. I love that they're making new ones. And so 2 years in a row, I've gotten to take my littlest kids on opening day to the dome with people dressed up as characters.
That's
and that
awesome.
For me is fucking awesome because that's what my dad did with me in the 70s, I guess.
Well, they're doing young Han Solo now. You could be young Chewbacca.
Okay.
Start that okay. movie. Start yes. it going.
There's yeah. lots of things you can
start
play.
Campaigning yeah. now for yeah. that part.
I'm
is
in.
Is
sure.
that something that you want to do?
You
do
could,
you want
to
be
stretch
in a Star
your range
movie?
And you could be young Yoda.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thing. Yeah.
Yes. Yoda prior to becoming tiny was enormous. Yeah.
A great warrior.
But then you'd have to see it. Then right. you'd have to see that
yeah.
movie.
Yeah. So I don't want to ruin it. So I don't want to do it.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the big action movies. I actually, right now, though, I mean, okay, I see most movies that come out, and I love them. I prefer, I think, what's being made on television, because mm-hmm. you get 10 hours of content, 13 hours of content,
yeah,
much longer to draw out and create the story and develop the characters.
It is. It's kind of like novels now.
It's
like,
fucking great.
Like, I was watching Daredevil, and I was like, this is so much better than what the movie could do.
Yeah.
Because they can really delve into each of the characters.
Yeah.
And
everything
give them a
now
lot,
is serialized, you know? And it's like, enough already. Can't we just watch a show where you can sit down and watch an episode and not have to watch them all in order?
But they still have that. There's
yeah,
the Big
there's
Bang
plenty
Theory
of those.
Is on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it annoys me. They're doing that with Star Trek now. And I'm like, no, don't do that to Star Trek.
You're
don't do
a TV
it to Star
fascist.
Trek.
That's your problem.
I am.
You want it all to be
I want it all
60s,
to be...
70s TV.
Yeah.
Yes. You know? The Orville's like that, and that's I'm really excited about that show.
Every episode is new.
Yeah, every right. it's a
you
it's,
don't have to have watched. Everything
yeah, you can just sit down and watch an episode.
That is, there's something nice.
And you're
to
like,
that,
oh, there's but, a weird monster dude sitting on an egg.
Yeah,
that's cool.
All right, that. Mike, where can people find you?
Wherever they want. I am at Mike Black Attack on all social media, and I hang out at Nick's Check Cashing sometimes. And, so if you happen to have Totino's pizza rolls, just give me a call and I'll be over. It's pretty easy to get in touch with.
Always keep them in the fridge. That's what I
yeah. eat.
Always in the freezer for Mike. You can always get me at Stephen Glickman, STPHEN Glickman on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe to the Nighttime Show podcast. Ethan, it has been a total honor and a pleasure to be able to hang out with you in your home, with you, chat with you about your career and your life and all the amazing things that you do. And this was super fucking cool, man.
Thanks
for
having
so
me.
Much.
Yeah. Thank
absolutely.
You so much.
Yeah. You're the best. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
Too bad he won't be listening to this podcast.
I wouldn't want to fuck it up. There are so many corrections. I'd be calling you to do edits. It
yeah.
would be a total nightmare.
Is there any way you could edit out
yeah.
all of it?
Yeah. Like, just remove my just, voice.
There's about 40 minutes in there I'm not comfortable with of the 45.
That, yeah.
All right. Thanks, guys, for listening. We'll talk to you soon. Don't forget to share it. Oh.
All right, so we are rolling.
If I'm at a restaurant with you, I just sit at a different table. Yeah. All right, here we go.
Because we don't fit.
Yeah. Oh, you know, you son of a bitch.
Oh, I'm in a booth and you need a chair.
Oh, he's a bad
that
person.
That hurts my feelings.
He's a bad friend.
He just insulted all of us.
He's the worst best friend ever.
What's going to happen? You guys going to catch me if I run?
Come on. Hit record already.
I already did.
Are we
recording?
This is the intro.
That was the intro for the show.
I might just run that as the intro.
Yeah, just Matt being an asshole.
Have you heard that
again?
Podcast where a skinny guy makes fun of a bunch of fatties?
Jack Spratt, three wives.
And then gets buried in the Hollywood Hills.
Hi, I'm Matt Walker. Welcome to Fat Shaming. Fat Shaming Podcast.
All right, here we go. Ready?